Welcome to the Center for Global Initiatives podcast, a production of the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing Center for Global Initiatives. Tune in monthly to hear from Johns Hopkins students and faculty about their travels, projects, experiences with, and thoughts on global health nursing. Welcome to the fourth episode of the Center for Global Initiatives podcast. Today we're talking to Dr. Glass. Dr. Glass is a professor here at the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing, as well as the Associate Dean for Research and the Associate Director for the Johns Hopkins Center for Global Health. Her research focuses on intimate partner violence and healthcare disparities. Today on the podcast, we're going to talk to Dr. Glass about the Pigs for Peace Project in the Democratic Republic of Congo, of which she is a co-founder. Welcome, Dr. Glass.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on the podcast. So just to get us started, can you talk briefly about your background as well as your interest in global health?
Great. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah. So I am a returned Peace Corps volunteer in the early 90s, and I ended up in Zaire, which I had to look on the map as to where that was when I was got my posting for Peace Corps.
So maybe you could just tell all of us.
So Zaire is now the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Oh, okay.
So, but before that,
I definitely knew that.
Okay, it was the Belgian Congo, and so so the Belgians had had colonized the. It's a massive country. It's about the size of the United States east of the Mississippi. And so I arrived there in August of 1990, just fresh out of university, and didn't have a clue as to what I was doing. I grew up in rural Virginia, had never left the country, knew very little about anything, but had an amazing experience and fell in love with the country and learned a lot. But it was a very tumultuous time. Mobutu was the dictator, and there was a massive effort to remove him in the early 90s, and there was a coup attempt, and the Peace Corps was evacuated. Oh. So I ended.
Are they back there now?
No, they've never gone back. So we left in the about a year and a half into my post. And it was the beginning of really the AIDS, understanding HIV and AIDS, and thought, wow, what a great career nursing would be. And heard about the Return Peace Corps Fellow Program at Johns Hopkins, and was in the second class of the Accelerated Program.
Oh, wow.
So that's how I got into nursing and got to Hopkins, thought I would go right back, finish my nursing degree, thought I could go back overseas because I thought I'd be useful then. Mm-hmm. And then fell in love with public health and wanted to stay and stayed and stayed and stayed and ended up doing my master's of public health and master's of nursing here. Was an instructor on faculty while I was working on my PhD at the University of Maryland, and then left for 5 years and was faculty in Oregon. And when an opportunity came back was when they opened the Center for Global Health, and I was able to come back. So I've been back now for 12 years and very happily back. I have funding to do work in the Congo, so I can spend a significant amount of time there working with colleagues and developing programs and trying to, really what we're doing is development programs that would improve health and economic well-being, but in an area that's conflict affected, that's a humanitarian effort, but moving from humanitarian emergency response to development work. And so since DR Congo has been post-conflict for, since 2006 in theory, we're now 10 years post-conflict, and we're really still looking at very few development projects, and so trying to get those off the ground and change the focus a bit.
So can you talk a little bit about the project, Pigs for Peace?
Sure. So Pigs for Peace comes out of wanting to reach often really hard to communities in rural areas, in conflict, post-conflict settings. So microfinance, microcredit, there's a lot of different versions, but it's a small loan to help jumpstart a family, a group's business opportunity, and it's an income generating activity. Mm-hmm. And so in rural areas where we're working, there are very few microfinance, microcredit organizations that have the capacity to reach these areas because there's not an infrastructure in the country. So to get out there, to have staff out there, it's a very expensive proposition. And usually the loans can be $50. So it's not a sustainable model with oftentimes with a cash loan. Mm-hmm. And also in these communities, $50, I mean, these are communities on average that make, the households are living off $300 a year. So $50 is a significant amount of money at one time. And it's a really hard for a household to have $50 and be able to use all of that for capital for a business when there's so many competing needs, school fees, eating protein, a family member sick. So oftentimes the money is loaned out or provided before they've actually invested and started a project. So it's very hard for them to repay. And usually repayments quite quickly, it's 3 months. And so we were trying to think of a model that would make more sense. And this is what we call a livestock. It's really a hybrid between a microcredit project and a livestock transfer, a productive asset transfer mm-hmm. model, where the productive asset is an animal, because this is an area where wealth is obtained by having animals, animal husbandry, and agriculture. There's no industry, there's no businesses, people don't have salaried position. And so this is a way that people also show status in a community. It's like a visible savings account that you're doing well. This, in the area we're working, about 4% of our participants have electricity. So if you're going to have, if you have a pig, and that's, of course, pigs for feces, the animal is pigs, you're not going to slaughter a pig and have it for dinner for your family. It's going to be sold at a market when there's an opportunity or there's a crisis, as savings accounts mm-hmm. are for. So if your son's getting married, you might sell your pig, one of your pigs, to help support the marriage. Or if your child's sick and they need special treatment, you might sell the pig to get transportation to the hospital to get your child the care they need. So that was the model. So we provide a loan of a piglet. We have a team on the ground who supports the home visits, sort of like nurses do home visits. Mm-hmm. We do home visits for the family around mentoring how to care for the pig. We have a veterinarian tech. We do the vaccinations. But we also talk with the families about how they're going to use the resource to improve their health and well-being and economic. What are their plans? And so we also talk about shared decision-making between a husband and a wife. We chose pigs because it's a sex-neutral, gender-neutral animal. Women can own pigs as well as men, where a cow and a goat is typically connected to the dowry system, so women don't usually have decision-making over that because men pay the dowry. So it was a way to engage men and women together in a project, and that was really something that the community talked a lot about. You know, in a community that's experienced significant violence and conflict, both the men and the women have been infected, as well as both boys and girls. So it couldn't be a women's only program, because we know that sometimes when men are left out and they're feeling like the women are gaining, roles are changing, it might be taking their responsibility mm-hmm. as the head of household, there can be conflict. Mm-hmm. And it could increase conflict in the household and result in violence or abandonment or other negative outcomes, unintended. So that was a real key from our partners and the community, that they didn't want a women's only program or a men's only program. They wanted men and women to work together.
That's great.
So once they repay the loan, it's two piglets, and those go to other community members, and they're then mentored by our team around how to continue to breed in the pigs. Sometimes they sell a few pigs and invest in other animals. Sometimes they sell pigs and invest in a market business, like maybe they're going to sell flour or manioc or other items in the market. But they use the money from our data showing that many times it's for school fees for children, it's for repairing their homes, obtaining metal sheets for their roofs. So it's very practical in many cases.
That's What's the sustainability of the project look like?
Yeah, so that's what's kind of fun about it and why we talk about it as a development project. Because in a lot of programs that we've seen in the area, livestock, many organizations, Heifer, for example, grants mm-hmm. livestock to people. We're trying to change the model instead of a gifting an animal, that it's a credit, and the credit is paid back to the community, and two other people get the pigs. And so it's also to build back relationships in the community. So when your pig gives birth, that you're to repay your loan or your credit, you give two back, and those go to two other members in your community. And so that's how we grow the project. And we originally started with 10 pigs, and we now have about 1,500 families in 35 villages with pigs. Wow. So it's really them playing them forward. This has been going on for, this is 8 years, so this takes time to grow. But so what we've seen is, in looking at our study, is at 18 months, we followed the families for 18 months and over did interviews with them across from baseline into 18 months. And we saw for both men and women, improve in health, physical health, but also a reduction in anxiety and symptoms of PTSD. Women reported, married women and their partners reported reduced use of violence, intimate partner violence. And women and men reported in their household that they had to take less credit from family and friends. Credit is usually taken from family and friends because there's no financial service, there's no banks. And they had more animal assets, so they were growing the project compared to a control group, which didn't get the pig until the offspring. They were delay control. So
that's incredible.
Yeah, it's really exciting. We're very excited. Yeah. So hopefully that publication will come out soon. So.
When you talk about your team and mm-hmm. like, where did the idea for this come mm-hmm. from, and who are the members of your team?
And maybe you can talk a little bit more about the in-country partners and their role in developing the program.
Great. So in 2006, the peace accord had been signed in DR Congo, and I had a colleague, and I felt like it was an opportunity to go back. And all we were hearing globally was how violence had been such a significant, human rights violations, violence against women had been such a significant part of the conflict that I thought maybe I could do some work with some local partners. And so I had a good colleague who is an economist and a professor at UMBC who's Congolese. And he helped me meet up with some people in Congo. And I spent 2 weeks in 2006 just traveling with them through the East, visiting programs that existed for victims of violence, healthcare programs, nursing schools, a lot of different programs, and talking to people about what they thought were the priority needs, thinking about what programs would be reasonable. And in the time, I was talking to the colleague who was organizing my 2 weeks, and his name is Mitima Impananu. His French name is Remy. Even though he himself had been displaced 3 times because of the war, he had not seen the level of atrocities that we saw in that 2 weeks. And so we spent the next 2 years. It takes a long time to build partnerships mm-hmm. and trust. And I would continue to go over, and we would meet, and we would talk, and we would discuss. And because he's an expert in microfinance, he's run a microfinance organization for 25 years, I thought we would do something with cash loans.
Right.
Maybe group savings and loans. I did some training in these models to learn more about it. But over time, we realized that that cash was probably not going to be something that we could sustain given the multiple challenges in the rural areas. And a lot of it was with the displacement and conflict, people no longer trusted their neighbors like they did in the past, because with so many militia groups and rebels, sometimes people helped out other rebel groups. And it's very interesting. We did a lot of qualitative interviews with people, and I remember one man saying, last week that leader in the community was with this rebel group that was against us. this week he's with another rebel group that's protecting us. So he's like, how do I know who's safe? And that's how people felt in the community. So we were concerned about traditional microcredit programs because that usually requires groups working together to take loans and being collateral to each other. So he was pretty sure that wouldn't work. And so we decided to, we started talking about animals or productive assets, and we talked to villagers and we said, if you had $50, what would you buy? And probably 75% said, I'd buy an animal. You know, I need to start my animal husbandry again, because that's how wealth is obtained. And so we eventually said, well, then let's figure out the right animal. And that's where you really have the cultural expertise of your partners.
Right.
Like, I wouldn't know that women and men could breed pigs, but not a goat or cow. A woman couldn't make decisions around selling. But the good thing about a productive asset loan transfer is that it could be, you know, it could be goats. It could be another animal, depending on, you know, the community and right. what their priorities are. We were doing pigs. Pigs are prolific. They have 6 to 14 offspring at one pregnancy. They can have 2 pregnancies a year. So you can sell a piglet when you wean it from its mother at 2 to 3 months for about $30, where you have one goat a year, one calf a year, and many you have a lot need a lot more land for grazing, which most people don't have access to. So a pig lives in a pig pen, and it's much more practical.
What do they feed the pig?
So that's the other nice thing. You don't need special food. It's really what we teach them is local resources. For example, manioc's the staple mm-hmm. food. So you can boil the manioc root, and they can certainly eat the flour if they mix it with grain. But also the leaves of the manioc plant, people eat that quite often, and so you have to cook it. So they'd have to cook it for the pigs, but the pigs love it. But sweet potato leaves, sweet potatoes, the peels from potatoes, the peels from manioc, the avocados, you know, fruit, stuff people get off their trees, the peels of bananas, all of this is just, and we do classes on what's available in their community that a pig can eat.
Mm-hmm.
We also do classes on what plants could be medicinal for the pig, because you're trying to prevent worms and other digestive issues. And we have a farm where we vaccinate and make sure that the pigs we're sending out to communities are healthy. But we also have a breeding policy because we have to make sure that we're not, I don't know a lot about this, but we have a certain breeds that we make sure we're rotating the breeding so we're not creating issues with overbreeding animals.
As far as sustainability goes, is the plan eventually to leave it all in the hands of the people in the village, and how will that work with vaccines and breeding?
Yeah, so we're at that point right now. We have to make the transition.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been working with, we've made some connections with an organization called Farmer to Farmer, but they also do support for technical assistance to help organizations like Pigs for Peace to think about how do they create and partner a sustained market, but then how do they help communities develop strategies that they buy their own vaccines and that they have a vet tech available to them. So the other thing is we're trying to develop we want to make sure there's a market for people to sell. There's no place in the region, we've done this assessment, market assessment, people, if they're going to buy pork products or sausage, they go to Goma, which is north. And so we want to develop a production industry in the area that can employ community members, but also we can buy product from the farmer so that they have a reason to keep breeding.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our next step, but we're going to have experts come and help us do that.
How much time do you see that unfolding over?
Oh, I think a couple years. I think, you know, we'll we have funding to keep work going for the next couple years, and we're doing that consultation now. But it's, you know, the one thing I really like about working with Congolese, my colleague, is, you know, we know it takes time, and to do it well, we have to be thoughtful about it, partner right. wisely, and we're not in a rush, because we'll make mistakes. I mean, we have a timeline, but we need to have expert consultation. The other thing we do is we go and visit sites that are doing it and get ideas, people that have been successful. And it may not be in Congo, it might be in Rwanda or Burundi, and see other people that are and how they've done it. And so, and you know, what resources we'll need, and then try to partner to develop that, get people to invest.
You talked about the reason for pigs and the lack of trust after the conflict. Have you noticed in your time there any change in the sentiment towards their neighbors, either because of the project or just outside of the project?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the nice thing time does help people and building relations again with your neighbors. I mean, there has been peace in most of these villages now for several years, and people have come back. And but one of the things we measured early on when we started this, we started to ask people what it was like to get, you know, when their neighbor repaid the loan and they got the pig. We don't go there and do that. They hand the pig to the neighbor as a repayment. We interviewed, and I remember one woman said, "You can only love somebody who gives you a pig." So, you know, it does help to build back trust. It also helps when other neighbors that maybe not be involved in the project see the success of the project, mm-hmm. and they come and talk to neighbors and they engage in the conversation about the project and how they can get involved. And and then if you have a village leader who is also part of the project, he or she is seen as a role model. So people see that and they want to be engaged. They see activity, and it's primarily positive activity. So I think that helps people. And they also have had where, you know, oftentimes a family has, you know, adult children living in the village. And so a mother or father may give their child one of the pigs, you know, so they can start the project. So it's not necessarily just the repayment that they're given to people in the village to help them start their own project as well. And the other thing is that once the project is disseminated into a village, they sort out how they're going to breed the pigs. So there might be somebody in the village that has a male pig that others use for the breeding, and so that becomes a way that people communicate and support each other. So it happens in multiple ways. But I mean, it's not immediate. People are leery. There's also, I mean, certainly as in anything, when somebody does well, you might get jealous of them. And you know, this is a community that's had a lot of horrific things happen. So when people have had such bad experience, oftentimes they start to talk about witches and witchcraft and sorcery. And so if a pig dies, they'll say, "My neighbor put a curse on me." So there's a lot of things we have to work through with the community. And our agents are really great at engaging the community leaders to bring people together to talk about it and try to work out issues. But for the most part, it's been positive. But there's always potential for jealousy and negativity in successful projects, yeah.
I was going to ask you, is there competition to participate in the program, and how do you go about choosing who gets to participate?
Well, the way we originally do it is that people come and ask in the original villages when we started. So right now we have a team leader who works at, who runs our farm with a couple of other staff. And the communities that aren't involved in the study, which are 10 villages further away, they know to go there. And they go and they say, "I'm really interested in this." And oftentimes they have to be on a wait list. And what our leader says is, you know, go back to your village and try to get a group of people in your village that are interested, and I'll come out and have a meeting with you, and we'll talk about, because they have to build a pig pen before we'll give them a loan. And we'll talk about sort of what this is and the project and how you could be involved. And once you agree and you build the pig pen, then we will put you on a wait list, and we will eventually, mm-hmm. can't promise it will happen in the next month, mm-hmm. but we will work very hard to get you a loan to start in your village. Okay. So we try not to start with just one person. We try to get maybe 10 people in the village to be a part of, because then it can grow much faster. And also they have some support.
And they're fostering an early commitment, right. too, by building the pig pen. That's really neat.
I love that a career in nursing can lead you to raising pigs in the Congo.
Me too. I have to say, when I started, I didn't imagine that.
So, gives me a lot of hope for my future.
Yeah, it gives me a lot of hope, too.
Lastly, I just like to ask all of our guests on the show to give a little bit of advice to people that are interested in pursuing a career in global health nursing. Mm-hmm. What would your advice be?
Well, I think my what I see is what is great for nursing is that combination of nursing and public health degrees. Mm-hmm. When you go out for your first jobs or early experience, you know, there's so much pressure on international NGOs and governmental organizations that are trying to do work in these communities to limit the foreign staff and really be, you know, engaging the local community mm-hmm. staff. And what I think nurses bring and that have a background in public health is they can mentor in the healthcare setting some really practical skills that right. build capacity in a really meaningful way. But they can also mentor in program development. Like a Pigs for Peace right. that links clearly to health and nutrition. And so they bring that focus. And I think that the other things that nurses have going for them is they're really practical. It's a very practical degree, I think. And that's what development and global health needs, to be really sort of get on the ground what's happening and develop strategies to address that. And I think that's what our nursing education does. But I think the combination of public health gives you that population-based perspective. So certainly from the one patient, you can go all the way out to look at what's happening at the population level. So I think that sets you apart from other disciplines.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being on the show.
I'd love to. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening, and tune in on the first Thursday of every month for a new episode. You can find more information about the Johns Hopkins School of Nursing Center for Global Initiatives at nursing.jhu.edu/CGI.
Anne, do you have any other questions?
Do you need any nursing students to help raise pigs?
Because we're available.